Welcome to the Work Podcast. I'm Anne-Marie Kerwin, America's editor, and today we're going to explore the tension inherent in balancing brand and performance marketing needs for startup companies, especially those funded by venture capital. These companies are under tremendous pressure to show growth as soon as possible, and that means they often lean hard on that performance marketing lever to deliver sales. But that also means they're in danger of sacrificing the opportunity to establish their brand identity. My guest today recently wrote a piece for WARC exploring this dilemma, and he's lived this. Michael Fanuel, founder and director of Lab of Creative Commerce. He's a creative marketing strategist who has helped drive growth for brands including Dos Equis, Arby's, Cadillac, Charles Schwab, Cheerios, and Unilever. He's also the author of a book, Stop Making Sense, The Art of Inspiring Anybody. Most recently, he's been working with startup companies and has come up with a framework to help them navigate these challenges. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Anne-Marie. It's so nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me. So the article you wrote for WARC is entitled Burn the Marketing Funnel, a high-impact marketing model for businesses that can't wait to grow. So tell me how you started thinking about this issue.
Yeah, I guess I started thinking about it many, many years ago when I was a baby brand strategist at advertising agencies. And the mission was simple. Figure out what a brand could represent at its absolute best and inspire communications that build an emotional connection with people, that get them to know your brand and love your brand. But I think we've all noticed that over the last 15 years or so, technology and the proliferation of digital marketing capabilities in particular have really taken that traditional model and put it under siege. In a world where you can measure almost every cent of your marketing budget, the demand for every bit of your marketing to drive results has never been more intense. And so that traditional art, craft of building a brand that's loved and meaningful and distinct is on shakier ground, more shaky ground than it's ever been. And I think I first began to realize this when I was the chief creative officer at General Mills. This was 2014, 2015, 2016. And these are brands at General Mills that are revered and beloved. It's Cheerios, it's Yoplait, it's Nature Valley. But never before had our partners in the trade, and by that I mean supermarkets, Kroger's, Walmart's, Costco's, begun to demand that our marketing dollars do more than build love and affinity, that they really build velocity and turns, as they say, off of the supermarket shelves. And so you began to see a shift in the investment of marketing budgets away from TV commercials and the like, into things like coupons, sales programs, trade programs. And as a lover, as a believer, as a defender in the power of brands, this was really disconcerting, if not downright depressing to me. What are we doing hawking these amazing, revered, valued brands as if they're, two-for-one discounts at the local flea market? So I think I did what a lot of people in my position did. I doubled down on my defense of traditional brand building. And the best tool for defending traditional brand building is that marketing funnel. It's so intuitive. It makes so much sense. And you say to your audience, you say to your colleagues, what we're doing now is top of the funnel stuff. We're building awareness. We're building love and affinity. But that's valuable because it pushes people to the middle of the funnel. And that's where we're going to build consideration and preference. And when that works, we're going to push them to the very bottom of the funnel where we're going to incite action with offers and incentives. And I found myself using the funnel as so many of my colleagues, so many of my peers had done. And yet I don't know if it worked.
Really? Even at General Mills, you felt like that it wasn't working then?
Yeah, I think that's right. Because for the funnel to really work, you need enough money to disperse over all the layers of the funnel. And even big, bold brand marketers are cash-strapped these days. And as what I said earlier, the expectation, because it's gotten so easy to measure bottom of the funnel performance, there's an expectation you should be able to measure middle of the funnel and top of the funnel performance with the same precision. A dollar in and what happened? What's the result? But it's difficult to measure top of the funnel stuff. You do tracking studies, awareness studies, brand health studies. These are things that happen over the course of months, if not years, to be meaningful. And who has months or years to see whether or not their business is succeeding these days?
Right. Especially when everyone's just trying to make it to the through the quarter.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, it's funny. I know that a lot of the amazing brand gurus talk about the return of brand marketing sometimes being an 18-month or a 24-month operation, and that might be right. It might take months and months to really build distinction, emotional distinction for a brand in a crowded marketplace with consumers who've got so many other things occupying their attention. That might be right. But we also know that most CMOs these days aren't sticking around for more than 2 years. So you've got this terrible irony. I think Aristotle said tragedy is when two truths conflict. And the tragedy here is that it might take 2 years to build an amazing brand, and you might not have 2 years to do the job because as a CMO, you're likely out on your ear after 24 months.
The startups that you were working for, when you tried to bring this brand building into the startup culture, you were finding that there was not a lot of patience for the idea of brand building? Or
yeah, I think there were sort of three steps in my journey. No, at General Mills, I realized that even the biggest and most revered brands and culture were feeling the heat of performance marketing. I then spent a couple of years running a media company called Assembly. And what I realized there is that the media industrial complex in the marketing world was complicit. Was downright cozy with that cabal of performance marketers who were caring less and less about brand marketing every day. They were saying, look, clients, look, marketers, we can and we should be able to measure every cent, every iota, every drip of marketing that we put into the world. I then went to a company called Zen Business, which was a fintech startup. And like any VC-backed startup, we had to protect the cash that we had. We had to guard it like dragons. But I was lucky to have a CEO and leadership who really did deep in their hearts believe that building a brand was a worthwhile exercise. And so they gave me permission to do what very few startups can do, which is traditional upper funnel brand marketing. And with our brilliant ad agency, Joan, we created this lovely anthemic campaign urging people to quit the hell of their current jobs and become entrepreneurs, start their own business, own their future. And we had everything they'd need to succeed, from getting them through the legal rigmarole to helping them with their bookkeeping and building their website and absolutely everything else. And I've got to say, Anne-Marie, the marketing we produced was some of the marketing in my career that I am most proud of. It made my heart swell. It made my jaw drop. It made my spine tingle. And it didn't work.
Hmm.
It got some attention. It drove people to our website, but it didn't really drive conversions, didn't really create customers at a meaningful scale. And this was tragic for me as someone who was flying the banner of believing in brand marketing,
mm-hmm.
right? Like this brand stuff is supposed to work. What in the world is happening here? And there were all sorts of excuses, right? Again, I go to the funnel and I point to the funnel and I go, well, this is upper funnel stuff. Just wait till the mid funnel kicks in. Wait till the lower funnel gets going. But that's not an acceptable answer when a business needs to grow and needs to grow quickly, needs to scale dramatically. Luckily, at the same time, I say luckily, but it's ironic because we as a company were faced with a price war in the category. A lot of our customers were giving away free companies, free LLCs, business building tools for free, for $0. And as a marketer, you never want to compete in a price war, but sometimes you have to. And so we knew that we needed to offer free LLC formation to customers. We needed to match our competitors. We needed to match the category. But there was something so depressing and disheartening about just flying the flag for $0, about giving out essentially coupons to the marketplace. Because again, we still believed in building a brand. And what we did was fascinating. It was an experiment. We asked ourselves whether we could do $0 marketing, give away free LLCs, but to do it in a way that felt one of a kind, unique, distinct, true to our brand and true to our purpose, which was about empowering the entrepreneur and everybody. And so we did. We had a series of campaigns that gave away free LLCs, but to particular communities. So 3.5 million moms were forced to leave their work during the pandemic. We invited them back in. If you're a mom, we're going to give you a free LLC. And then we turned to the thousands of people who were being laid off in the tech industry. We did the same thing. We said, if you've been laid off in the tech industry, you've got skills the world could use, fly your own flag, here's a free LLC for you. It was the same exact offer that all of our competitors were putting into the marketplace. Free. $0. But we gave it some meaning. We gave it some brand depth, some brand texture, some brand magic, and it did wonders. It did both that top of the funnel job of building distinction and interest and awareness, but boy, did it also do that bottom of the funnel job of getting us real flesh and blood customers who would go on to be extremely valuable ones. And I think, Amory, this is when I really began to think that maybe the problem was the funnel itself. Mm-hmm. That for marketers who've got a world of a job to do, but very, very little money to do it, the idea that you could sprinkle some money here and some money there and do some marketing here and some marketing there and use these KPIs here and those KPIs there and pay these creators here and those creators there, it just felt so intuitively diffuse and dumb. And I think what our exercise in free LLCs showed is that there's a way of integrating marketing efforts, not mm-hmm. disintegrating them. And that was really the birth of this thing that I called brand motions, branded promotions. How do you take the tried and true techniques that we know get customers, that we know get cash registers ringing, 2-for-1s, 50% off, free trials, bring a customer, get 1,000 points, whatever it happens to be, the things that we know move people to become customers, and how do you do that stuff in a way that's jaw-dropping and brilliant and moving? You don't want to wait 18 months. You want it done all at the same time.
So how do you do that if you're a startup with not a lot of brand awareness? Like, what elements did you bring from your brand building campaign into brand motions that really made that connection for people?
Yeah, I think the great mistake of most performance marketing is that it surrenders the obligation to be emotional. Mm-hmm. Just because something's a discount, just because something's a coupon, just because something is a don't wait, rush now, click here, buy today, doesn't mean it can't have an emotional resonance. And that might be about urgency. Mm-hmm. It might be about ambition. I mean, come on, the most famous tagline in the history of marketing says, act right now. It says, just do it.
Right.
At the heart of the most emotional marketing is a call to action. Right. And so I think at the heart of calls to action should be some emotional marketing. And I think mashing those two things together is really, really the secret. We've let performance marketing off the hook by being clinical. And frankly, we've let brand marketing off the hook by being indulgent.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with the rise of digital techniques and the digital ecosystem, it's become in a lot of organizations easy to say, this is the group that does performance marketing. This is the group that does brand building. And often they might not even report up to the same person in the C-suite, right? Like brand building might be under marketing, but performance efforts might be under sales or finance or something like that. So you have this disconnect where people aren't, there's not alignment anymore because the teams are pursuing different, you know, they have different quarterly goals, right? So
you're absolutely right.
I would think in a startup, though, the advantage would be that it would be a small enough team that that communication could happen much more quickly and be aligned better. Is that something that you found, or was there even an issue then?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the name I've come up with for many of these startups, brands that need to scale quickly, but have got very little precious fuel to do so, is rocket ship brands. They need to blast off. They're rumbling. They need a lot of power. And the advantage a rocket ship brand has is actually the limitation of its resources. It doesn't have money to waste. It is all hands on deck. It is all dollars on deck. And the tyranny, the pressure of not having a lot of money really, I think, forces not just innovation in thinking, but to your point, innovation in how teams work together. You know, many of these rocket ship companies, many of these startups have sales teams and have marketing teams. But when you've got a budget, a marketing and sales budget of $10 million, $15 million, every penny of that really matters. And you've got to get together, you got to sit around a table, you got to collaborate and figure out how to spend it. And it is never acceptable to say 60% of that budget will pay off in 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's sort of getting at the problem that we talk about, that messy middle of the marketing funnel, right? That there's a difficulty in figuring out how you even sometimes draw the line between what's brand building and what's performance. Because as you say, all of your marketing should be driving the business forward. It's just, how do we measure it?
I think that's right. I mean, it's interesting. Airbnb has gotten a lot of talk over the last year and a half because their CMO announced that they had tilted too far toward performance marketing, and they were going to correct that, invest more in brand building.
Right.
And all of my friends in brand building land cheered and applauded, and to this day point at Airbnb, look, even Airbnb realized performance marketing isn't the answer. Well, if you look at Airbnb's $100 million+ budget, they're still spending dozens of millions of dollars on performance marketing. But they can get away with that because they are spending over $100 million in marketing. The problem really happens at levels below that. When you've got 10, 15, even 25 or $30 million of a marketing budget, the idea that you would divide that like chips on a roulette table at a casino just feels really weird. So put your chips where they can be measured, which is traffic, which is conversions, which is sales, which is increasing lifetime value, which are the metrics that business owners really care about. Mm-hmm. You know, subject yourself to those measures and just find a way to beat the norms.
Mm-hmm. That is such an important point, that like what you're measuring is going to be where you put your money, right? So if we're just doing a lot of marketing speak of like clicks and you know, brand lift, and that doesn't actually feel to a C-suite like you're moving the business forward, right? You need to get to those metrics that actually do.
Absolutely. The only place in marketing where people value impressions is when they're judging SEs. It is complete nonsense to any real business owner. And it's funny, I was on the agency side. I was making the case for upper funnel metrics like impressions and awareness and reach and dynamism and momentum and love. And I believe that stuff matters. But when I became a client, when I was a marketer sitting on the other side of the table and agencies would cheerlead those metrics, it was hard not to roll your eyes. Because at the end of the day, we're accountable to business metrics. And I don't want to go on a scavenger hunt to link love and awareness to momentum, to dynamism, to trust, to sales. I want to stoke sales. And I need to do it this quarter. So again, for me, the measurement question is an easy one. Measure what's most meaningful to the business, which is a version of getting cash in the door, getting customers in the door. But crush those numbers by adding some creative fairy dust, by adding some creative magic.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, with the waning of traditional media and essentially all of our marketing moving into environments that can be more targeted, that it's difficult to make the argument for that sort of broad reach, although you're doing it in a digital environment as well, right? So. Mm-hmm. It used to be easy when it was like, it's a coupon, it's performance. If it's a TV right. ad, it's brand building. But I think thanks to digital, everything feels a little bit more like it should be performance.
I think that, but there's another amazing thing that's happened over the last 15 years. There's been the birth of maybe the most powerful media channel the world has ever known, which is people themselves. So back in the day, if you wanted to create broad reach, it was 100% on your shoulders as a marketer. You needed to pay for it. You needed to pay for it in broad mass media. But now, if I get a million customers, that's a million mouthpieces. Think of the impact that they have when they go, I just discovered this brand. I'm just using this app. I've just found this new thing that's working for me. It's a solution. You want to book a vacation? Here's what you should do. I love this airline. I hate this soft drink. Whatever it is. So I still do believe in creating a thing called culture. I believe that's important. But I don't believe that's a responsibility that falls simply upon the media spend, the reach of the media budget. I think I'd rather create millions of customers and have them go out and create culture on behalf of my brand than spend millions of dollars hoping and praying my marketing will do it alone.
That's really interesting. We've been talking at work about the idea of marketing needs to be worried about the four P's, right? Mm. But the only person ultimately at a company who has control over that is the CEO. It's not really marketing's remit on what the product is, what the price is. Like a lot of that falls outside. So you really do need to almost market marketing's influence to the C-suite so that they can help shape all of those elements.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's been this note in the conversation lately that CMOs are losing their influence with the C-suite. Why are they? I kind of scratch my head, and it reminds me when I was a young planner, and planners would complain that the creatives weren't listening to them. The creatives weren't listening to their briefs and weren't listening to their brilliant strategies. You know, most people aren't psychotic. If somebody's going to help them, they're going to accept their help. If somebody's going to deliver for them, they're going to accept that person's help. And I think if CMOs are losing a voice, losing influence in the C-suite, it's maybe because they're not delivering things that are valuable to the business. And again, I don't blame them. I blame the damn funnel. We've been brainwashed into thinking that it's okay to spend 60, 65, 70% of your marketing dollars on upper funnel nonsense that might work down the road. And I know we talked about this. I love Peter Field and Les Binet and the work that they've done. Again, and I love it because I've been in the situation where I've been waving the flag for brand building, and they've given us the evidence to defend it. The problem is that evidence leads to a strategy and a way of thinking that isn't relevant for most companies in the world. When they're saying spend 50% of your money on long-term brand building, even in your first year, and ratchet that up to 60% in your second year, again, if I'm Airbnb and even if I'm Cheerios, I can make the case for it. But if I am one of the literally tens of thousands of companies that are out there spending $10, $15, $20 million a year in marketing, how can I do that? Like, what does it mean to spend 50% of my $10 million budget in year one to build the brand and 50% to acquire customers? So as I take $5 million, and I pay a great agency a fee, and then we produce some TV or commercial advertising and hope it works, but I don't have money to actually spend on media to support it, and then I spend the other 50% in coupons?
Yeah, we need to sort of rethink, right? What each communication is doing, and can you get emotion into the communications that would have normally been thought of as performance marketing? Yeah, the blending.
I think that's right. Yeah. For these rocket ship companies that I'm talking about, these rocket ship brands, the only job of marketing is to drive revenue. It's the only job of marketing is to drive revenue. And I happen to believe that emotion and creativity and inspiration does that more effectively than arguments and bullet points and reasons to believe. That's my point of view.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Thank you, Michael. This has been such a great conversation. Thank you so much for joining me today.
I loved it, Emery. Well, thanks for letting me yammer on. This is a really important topic, I know, for most marketers out there. And I know that there are different opinions, which is wonderful. But thanks for letting me share mine.
No problem. Thank you for coming on. For those of you listening, if you have examples of U.S. companies that are doing great, effective marketing and want to highlight that, or if you have an opinion on what works or doesn't work, WARC is eager to hear from you. So that's it for today. If you don't already, remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Thanks for listening.